so many companies leave their approach to kind of crisis management until the crisis is actually upon them, which can make it kind of challenging because nobody's really sure on where you're meant to go or who's in charge or what we're going to say and how we're going to approach things. And actually, there's so much work that you can do in advance.
Communication is a fundamental part of a company's success. Whether it's communicating in a crisis situation, strategic outreach with customers, clients, or stakeholders, or day-to-day internal staff communications. And having a clear and clever strategy for such communications is key. I'm Patrick Haughey, and my guest on this episode of the Ireland-Canada Connection is Lorna Jennings, Managing Director of Hanover Communications, an award-winning communications consultancy that advises enterprises, institutions, and individuals on building recognition and enhancing reputation. Lorna is an expert in all things communication strategy for companies of all sizes and in all sectors. And in this episode, we talk about why having such a strategy is so important. And Lorna also shares some advice on how to create one effectively. But she starts the interview by telling me a little bit more about Hanover.
So Hanover is a strategic communications and public affairs agency that we have our offices in Ireland, but we also have operations in London, Brussels, in the Middle East. So really, I think at the fundamental thing that we do that crosses all of the sectors and kind of practice areas that we operate in is that, you know, we work with companies to help them solve problems. So one of the, you know, questions that we always like to ask is kind of what's the thing that's keeping you up at night or that you're worried about that is going to impact your commercial objectives for the year ahead. And we think about how, you know, a suite of kind of external communications, internal comms, you know, potentially stakeholder relations or public affairs, or digital or some, you know, in most cases, some combination of all of the above can help to support and advance those commercial objectives.
So when we talk about communications in that sense, are we talking about what posts get put on social media channels, what press releases get sent out to the media, what communications go to political stakeholders, perhaps that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's kind of the bread and butter. That is nearly like the end result, I think, of a lot of the work we do. But actually, we often look to start at a kind of an earlier point of like, you know, I to go back to that kind of identifying what the issue is and when what's the plan and the strategy for how we're going to approach that. And then the tactical, you know, those kind of tactics from an execution perspective in terms of, well, a press release on this topic at this time, it will make sense, but we'll also support that with making sure that we have posts across all of our different channels. And we also have tailored and dedicated outreach to our key audiences in parallel is a key part of the kind of delivery of that. Of those strategies. But what we very strongly believe the kind of most impactful and effective campaigns are the ones where we're involved at a much earlier stage and in terms of that kind of problem identification and strategy development.
And I know you work with companies across all sectors and all sizes. So do you come across some similar problems that stretch across all of them? You mentioned the problems to be solved. Are there some sort of key problems that you see time and time again?
Yes, you know, there are sometimes on maybe a regulatory side of things, they're can be very kind of sector specific or maybe company specific. But really, you know, the themes around employee engagement and understanding what the bigger picture is in terms of mission, vision, values, direction of travel, really, they are in many cases kind of sector agnostic. And so we see a lot of recurring themes there in terms of how companies are trying to grapple with retaining or recruiting like the right people, you know, getting cut through in terms of particular issues that they might care about that are having an impact on their day-to-day activities. And there's a lot of there's a lot of kind of red threads between those in terms of how we can help, you know, how we often work with our clients to help them kind of streamline their communications, package them the appropriate way for the appropriate audience, and be clear at the outset on what it is they're trying to achieve. Because something that we see a lot of, and you see it a lot in agency across the board, is that, you know, there's that very busy and a lot of energy happening, but sort of that clarity on connecting it to what the direction is or why, what the why is for a lot of it is something that we try and make sure we keep that front of mind whenever we are working with clients. And that really sort of spans all sectors.
So one of the big things companies have to do now is make the world know very clearly their approach in terms of their why, their diversity and inclusion strategy, how they view sustainability from an environmental perspective, and all of these things in order, probably so primarily to attract the right people into the job, talented people.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of authenticity required there as well. You know, you don't want a company that's kind of at maybe a very early stage of their journey around promoting diversity and inclusion or moving into a sustainable space, kind of trying to dress it up and sound like they're right at the front of the pack, because people will see through that. So I think there's, you know, a real key to any of those effective communications is being transparent and authentic about where you're going and what the plan is. Fair enough, we might not be there yet, but we do have a plan, we are thinking about it, and we're on our way there, you know.
And looking at the different types of communication, I guess you have your proactive communication, where you decide one day, let's start this project and let's really get some messaging out there, let people know what we're all about, why we do what we do, etc. But then you have the reactive, where something happens, maybe, you know, a little bit like Pinot Fairies, but they probably had more control of that communication, but where something happens externally that you need to react to or that impacts your business that you then need to react to. So let's call that crisis communications. It probably falls into that bracket. This is an area I would imagine that a lot of companies like support with, because you are thrown into a situation where you don't have the luxury of time and soul searching and lots of nice meetings in order to figure out what to say. It has to be done quickly.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges, though, is that so many companies leave their approach to kind of crisis management until the crisis is actually upon them, which can make it kind of challenging, because nobody's really sure on where you're meant to go or who's in charge or what we're going to say and how we're going to approach things. And actually, there's so much work that you can do in advance of a project. You don't know when it's going to happen or what exactly it might be. But, you know, if going back to that idea of blue sky thinking, carving out some of that time for that, you could probably hazard a guess in terms of putting together a bit of a register of risks of what you think could, what types of issues you think could emerge. And so, you know, really the preparation is key in terms of ideal scenario of preparing for a crisis situation. Unfortunately, you know, it's a kind of a classic, I think probably a feature of human psychology, is not all companies kind of do that and have their simulation done in place and their black book of, in event of emergency, you know, here's the red button you push. And so we're all clear on the approach and protocols, which is the kind of ideal scenario. But really there's when a company's faced with a crisis situation, really there's a few fundamental principles, which is, you know, you have to have clarity on the information, and the insight, you know, be position yourself in as soon as possible as the kind of font of knowledge. If you are the crisis, then maybe you don't have an answer, but at least you're being clear on saying we're working to get an answer and we will have it at X period of time. You need to kind of have one spokesperson. You can't have a lot of different people running off in different directions with mixed messages, because that can just lead to confusion. And, you know, I think it needs to be, in many cases, there also needs to be that kind of real clear acknowledgement of issue, identification of problem, and then, you know, putting forward of what the road ahead is in terms of solutions and next steps. And that's where, you know, those are really, regardless of whether it's, I don't know, an incident on a manufacturing site or a cyber hack or anything in between, really those are kind of fundamental principles that apply regardless of situation.
So that's interesting. So it's all about a strategic approach. It to prepare what your strategy is going to be when, if and when this happens, And then I guess that can translate into, you know, let's say a lot of the companies will then have to react in a public way and speak about this on radio or TV. So there's almost, I think you touched on it there, there's that three-stage approach to a question or an interview approach where you acknowledge this, you might remind us, acknowledge the situation.
Yeah, identify the kind of issue and the response and then outline next steps.
Yeah. And even if you don't have all of the answers, if you don't know what went wrong, is it very important to be open about that?
I think so. You know, say you're investigating all possible opportunities, all possible avenues. You know, there is a difference between being very clear on what on having clarity in your communications and aligning that to whatever, you know, what the objective is at the outset, versus just opening the door and being completely transparent, you know, and saying, here's every single thing that ever possibly happened. You know, actually often in managing with a crisis, being very concise in terms of response and approach is actually the most impactful way of doing it. Kind of giving too much information or giving too much explanation of scenarios back and forth can sometimes just lead to more questions and concern and confusion in many cases. So it's very, very much about really sort of having that clarity at the outset of what's happened, what are we doing about it, and when will we going to be next speaking to you again about it? And then from a company perspective, you know, being very clear on who are the key people that are impacted by this and how are we speaking to them proactively, you know, in a one-to-one fashion, that this isn't all happening kind of via secondhand pieces or via the airwaves. Yes. And so, you know, if it's employees that are impacted, they need to be the first to hear anything any issues that has emerged. If it's, you're going to have a scenario where maybe there's a local politician that might be speaking about something, you need to sort of proactively kind of, you know, open that channel of engagement from the outset to just ensure that there's consistent communication that is aligned across all possible avenues.
When you're talking there, it brings to mind some of the people I would really admire as communicators when it comes to these situations. Two people I think that would jump to my mind would be Paul Reed of the HSE, in terms of how he handles a question, and he knows what to say in a concise way, and then he knows when to stop talking. And Pascal Donoghue is excellent as well, the Minister Pascal Donoghue. I just find them, both of them are very honest, and there's very little you can do when somebody's giving you an honest, non-defensive answer. There's not many places to go if you're inclined to try and, you know, go deeper or badger or, you know, be that kind of presenter or interviewer. Does anybody else jump to mind for you when it comes to really just powerful communicators?
I'd agree with both of those, and actually just on the same theme, I think Tony Holohan was very good during the past couple of years of just exactly that kind of, you know, maybe telling you information you don't want to hear, but being very clear and concise about the delivery of that.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think probably kind of neutralized a lot of the kind of negativity, fatigue, you know, criticism that came through as a result of that. Because as well, if you think about it, you know, I think he did an excellent job of linking that back to the why of really, you know, you may not want to hear that we're saying that we need to bring in more restrictions, but this is really about keeping people safe. And this is keeping our vulnerable loved ones safe. And I think he did, he was a very good communicator in that sense over the past couple of years.
That also brings to mind for me the difference between communicating in press conference situations and how you communicate on social media, because everyone loved Tony Holohan in press conference situations, but then there was a couple of tweets that attracted slightly more negative attention for Tony Holohan, such as driving through the streets of Dublin and putting out tweets about people congregating, and it kind of showed a different side, but I guess came across in a different way. So can social media be a little bit of a hornet's nest when it comes to how your communications are received?
Yes. So it can be such a challenge and so difficult, I think, for individuals, you know, public figures, or even organizations to try and get it right, because it is such a kind of tricky scenario, and it's like that authenticity and a bit of personality are the key things that are just like so important, and you kind of can't really manufacture that in some ways. You know, you see some you know, kind of companies try and do something. It's like that idea of like, let's make this go viral. You can't manufacture a viral moment. It either just strikes a chord or it doesn't. But in the, like, I think the Guards actually do a very good job on social media, something that you wouldn't kind of expect. I think they've won awards for it and everything in terms of, but it's very much about kind of having that bit of personality, and it's not about it, like Twitter being a channel for them to regurgitate whatever press release might be coming out of the Guard press office each day. It's kind of a completely different type of conversation that is aligned to, you know, how the frequency and the how that channel works, and it's much more about I get the sense we don't work with them, but it's about aligning to objectives around like community engagement and outreach and the work that they do on a day-to-day basis, and I think they do a really nice job of doing that with a little bit of humor and a bit of personality about it.
Fully agree. It's well worth, if anyone listening hasn't, on Garda Síochána Síochána Twitter feed, if you haven't seen it, it is well worth checking out. Really interesting approach. Lorna Jennings, it's been fascinating speaking with you and hearing some of your insights into this very, very important area. And I think you have certainly an interesting few years ahead in Hanover because of the nature of the way the world is going. So thanks for joining us. Lorna Jennings, Hanover Communications. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And that's it for this episode of the Ireland-Canada Connection. We hope you enjoyed listening. If you did, please press subscribe or follow on whatever platform you're listening on. And for more information on the Ireland-Canada Business Association, irelandcanada.com.